Well, good morning, everyone. Hope that your Christmas was great. Like Mark said, my name is Jake Smith, and I work here as a student ministry associate. Well, this is cool. Okay, this is a pretty special day for me because I grew up here. This is the church I grew up in. This is the church where in seventh grade I got my calling to ministry. This is the church that grew me into that calling, and then I came back here. So I'm just kind of taking this in right now. This is pretty cool. No. You don't have to clap, no. My family started coming here when the church first moved into this building, and so I have watched sermons from this stage for a while, and it was actually on my bucket list to preach from this stage. And so I get to cross that off. And so I just didn't think it would happen being on staff. I thought I'd have to weasel my way into teaching from here and just kind of like nudging Mark like, hey, do you need a special guest? And even though I'm not really special. So yeah, it's so great to be here. I'm so excited. When I was in high school, I used to sit in the very front row in the very first seat every Sunday. And so that was cool that it was open today for me to sit in again. And so I graduated from Carmel High School, and I went to Taylor University for 4 years and studied Christian ministries, and that is also where I met my wife, Janine, and she's here today. Janine, raise your hand. You gotta raise your hand. Yes! So that's awesome. And so, yeah. This is so cool. I'm like a little starstruck. By you all. So like I said, yeah, I watched sermons in that front seat all the time. And so I thought, for my first time up here, I need to incorporate a little bit of everybody. And so I'm going to try and bring John and Mark's energy, which, notice how I said try, because I don't know if I can even touch their energy. I mean, they are so energetic when they're up on stage, but I'm going to try. I've brought a prop for David. And probably most important to you, I'm bringing Jimmy and Tony's time because I know that there are a couple games today that you all want to go watch, especially the Colts game tonight. Go Colts. So we're going to get out of here and go watch those. Well, tomorrow is New Year's Eve, which means that it is time to make all of those New Year's resolutions that we follow through with for the entire year, every year. And if you followed through with a resolution for an entire year, like, first of all, congratulations. But second of all, I can't. I seriously cannot follow through with a resolution as much as I try. And I love New Year's resolutions. I love making them. I love something new, something to look forward to in the new year. And I do so well for January every day. I follow through with it, and I'm just, I do so well. But then February rolls around, and even though I've told myself, Jake, this is the year that you do it, this is the year that you follow through with your New Year's resolution, February 1st rolls around, and I get too distracted. Sometimes I completely forget what I even wanted to do, but most of the time I just get lazy. So why is it so hard to keep up with New Year's resolutions? Some of you have probably even just given up. You probably know that you're not going to follow through with them, so you don't even make them anymore. When I was at college, which was a whole 7 months ago, the New Year's resolution that I saw most apparent was to be healthier. And so starting January 3rd, when we would get back to school, the gym would be packed. I mean, there were so many people in there, you couldn't get a treadmill, you couldn't get a free, it was amazing how many people were there, you could hardly breathe. But then, just like me, around February 3rd, the gym was a little less full, and, you know, there weren't as many people there. And so I started doing something I'm not proud of, but maybe some of you have done it as well. I started to judge other people on their New Year's resolution. I started to look at their failures in keeping up because they weren't at the gym anymore. And for those people who I knew made a New Year's resolution, I would ask them to come with me or try to help them out by giving subtle hints like, hey, how was the gym yesterday? And so I would start to try to help them out, even though I wasn't following my own. I started to try to help them out with theirs. Let me give you the definition of a resolution. A resolution is defined as a formal expression of intention. A resolution is an intention. Intending to do something means that you have a goal or something you're aiming for. And for some time, and for some people, that's all it is, a goal. Now, don't get me wrong, setting a goal is great. Setting a goal is a good first step in going in getting to where you want to go. But we are imperfect people. And so if history repeats itself like it does for me, we're not going to follow through on our New Year's resolution. So why do we even bother making them? Why do we fool ourselves into thinking that this year would be any different than all the other years? Today I want to challenge you with this idea. Instead of making New Year's resolutions, what would it look like if we made revolutions? What would it look like if we revolutionized the way we live as disciples of Jesus? The term revolution is defined as a sudden, complete change in something. A complete change means something is final and is having impact. When you hear the word revolution, for me, I start to think of the Industrial Revolution. I start to think of all those school projects, all of those readings I had to do. But the Industrial Revolution was a pivotal point in history, because the Industrial Revolution changed a lot for us. It took place between 1760 and 1830, for all of you history buffs. And it changed the way we did production. Production efficiency went up. It lowered the cost of goods. And the list goes on and on. But the point is the industrial impact changed the way we operated and functioned. Now, even though they came later, the light bulb and the telephone are products of the thoughts in the Industrial Revolution. And I don't know about you, but if I try to think about living without a light bulb or a telephone, I'd probably be a little lost. Some of you are lost without your phone. Some of you are literally lost without light. So it's always good to have those two. And so to think of what our world would be like without the Industrial Revolution kind of makes your brain hurt a little bit. You try to like think through what it would be like. The Industrial Revolution was a time period where things were permanently changing. And I don't want this to be a history lesson, so I'm not going to go any more in depth than that. But there was a reason why it was called the Industrial Revolution and not the Industrial Resolution. If it was an Industrial Resolution, they probably would have just intended to do something great. But since it was a revolution, it had impact. It was extremely impactful for how we live today. It's still having impact on us now. And there's a character in the Bible who knows all about change. And he knows all about changes because he embodied change. He talked about change. Does anybody know who I'm talking about? Yep, and the Sunday school answer was Jesus. Great job. I work with students, so that's like the answer I always get. So it was Jesus. Jesus revolutionized the way we participate in faith. He revolutionized who can participate in faith. He revolutionized how we see God. If you would open up your Bibles or Bible apps with me to Matthew 22, and we're going to be looking at verses 34 through 40. And this passage comes to us when Jesus is surrounded by Pharisees and Sadducees. And so we read in verse 34, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question: Teacher, which is the greatest commandment? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Jesus is answering this question and telling those around, Jesus is telling those around him, the two greatest commandments are to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And these are important to look at today. Because I want to do something a little different. Today I want you to walk with me as a body of believers as we're going to evaluate 2018. We're about to hit a new year, and so it's only good to do some reflection. Now, I do not like reflection because I'm not good with my feelings, but evaluating and looking at how this last year was in the lens of these two greatest commandments is going to be important. So, for the first commandment, I want to ask you this question. How this past year did you love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind? When times are great, it is so easy to love God. Kids are succeeding in what they're doing. Your marriage probably feels like it's at an all-time high. You're accomplishing your goals. You're accomplishing great things at work. And you just sit in that moment and you say, God, thank you so much for this life. Thank you for all the great things that you've given me. Thank you for what I'm doing. But then when times get hard, we start to rely on ourselves. We start to push God a little bit off to the side and think, you know what? This is so hard, and you're so far away, so I'm just going to do this on my own. I'm going to rely on myself, and I'll see you later, maybe. And maybe for some of you, it's the opposite. When times are great, you forget about God. You start to look at all the things that you've done. And when times are tough, that's when you really start to rely on him again. But it doesn't matter whichever way you go. Proverbs 3 says something great. In verses 5 through 6, it says that we cannot lean on our own understanding, but we have to trust in God. And so in May, I graduated college without a job lined up. In June, Janine and I's career plans fell through. In July, we got married, not knowing where we were going to be, what we were going to be doing, or how we were going to be doing it. We got a pretty funny look from the clergy office when they asked, what's your employment? And we said, unemployed. So we were kind of panicking. We were trying to figure it out on our own. We started to try to make our plans by ourselves. And so we were kind of scrambling, and we had to sit and remind each other. God is going to put us where he wants us to be. He's going to put us where he needs us to be and where we're going to be most useful. And I can confirm that his plan is greater than anything we can think of, plan to do, or make the resolution to do in the new year. Going to a Christian college, I found myself very complacent with how to love God daily. I was surrounded by other Christians. I was taking ministry classes, so I counted like reading my Bible for classes, reading my Bible for my personal self. And so I got complacent in loving God. And he gave me a huge slap in the face this summer with me not trusting him completely. And I have the blessing and opportunity to stand on this stage and tell you that he will never fail. But this is why I don't want you to hear me saying, love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and he'll give you everything you want. It's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that there's a trust that comes from loving him. When you trust somebody, there's a mutual love there. There's a connection. There's a relationship. We don't usually just trust random people off the street. And so when you start to love God dearly with your heart, mind, and soul, you start to trust him more in all situations, good and bad. So, how have you been loving God with all your heart, soul, and mind? Now let's evaluate the second greatest commandment together. love your neighbor as yourself. Now, this idea can seem kind of countercultural, because right now we live in a society that's very individualistic. We have all the social media outlets, and a lot of the times it can become me, me, me. And so to read love your neighbor as yourself can kind of cause us to scratch our heads sometimes. So I live in an apartment complex, and I have three very close neighbors. Janine and I have gotten to know the people below us, but that's it. I have talked to one third of my neighbors. I have not been giving my best to them. And it's hard to love your neighbor when they mow that zigzag line in the lawn that borders yours, and then you have to like correct it for them. It's hard to love your neighbor when they cut down that tree in their yard that was actually giving you some privacy in yours. It's hard to love your neighbor when they never smile at you. I was scrolling through Facebook the other day, and Facebook has just become videos, so you can always find one. But I found this video of a guy who was an aerospace engineer, and the title on the video was Man Saves Neighborhood. And I was like, well, I have to click on it. Like, what did he do? And so I start watching this video, and he starts explaining how people had their packages stolen off their porches, and these thieves were just coming by in the middle of the day and taking people's orders and keeping them for themselves. And so he devised a glitter bomb. And so it was more high-tech than anything I have in my apartment. But it had cameras on it. It had like a mechanism that shoots glitter. And so when the person would open it, the glitter would shoot everywhere, in their car, in their home. And in the entire video was these people just chucking the mechanism out of their windows after it exploded with glitter. And I was like, whoa, he did save the neighborhood. Like, I bought into the video. But what I started thinking about was like, wow, in a very simple and silly way, he was loving his neighbors. He was loving his neighbors by creating this thing that was going to help them in the long run keep their packages. So I want to ask you, when was the last time that we prayed for an opportunity to have a conversation about faith with our neighbors? When was the last time you took time to hear how your neighbors are actually doing more than just a mailbox short conversation? When was the last time you invited your neighbors to church? How have you been loving your neighbor as yourself? And because of those two evaluations, I know I said we're only going to do two, but we're actually going to do a third one. And the third evaluation comes from Matthew 28:19. And this is where Jesus gives the Great Commission. He says, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. This is our calling. Jesus wants us to go into all the nations. The phrase, therefore, go, in Greek is translated going or as you go. And this is important to know because Jesus isn't talking about just a special event, a mission trip, a week at VBS, a week serving in the church, or a day serving in the church. He's not talking about those special times. He's talking about as you go. As you go to your child's recital. As you go to the gym for that New Year's resolution. As you go to your job during the week. As you go to the grocery store. How am I being intentional in my disciple making? This is an everyday command, and so the question I want you to reflect on is this. How have you been intentional in your calling? And I'm not talking about the calling of your job and what you feel called to do for your life, but I'm talking about the calling of the gospel, the calling to make disciples of all nations as you go through life. There are people in our lives that we can reach out to and disciple, but we get so comfortable coming to church and being surface level that we just forget about them. Being a disciple of Christ is about more than being nice to people. It's about living a life that exudes Christ, a life that people look at and know that we are followers of Christ, because how we reach out to them in love and how we reach out to them to help them get to know Jesus. In John 13:35, Jesus says, people will know you are my disciples by the way you love. Now, I don't stand here today as a perfect person. I would like to say that, but I just can't. That'd be a lie, and you can't lie in church. The evaluation we're doing today is the same evaluation I'm doing with myself. I'm not perfect at following the two greatest commandments, and I'm not perfect at following the Great Commission. But I've come to the realization that in order to be better for the kingdom, we need to see how we're doing on those three statements. It's going to help us tremendously as we live as disciples in 2019. In John 15, we read Jesus talking to his disciples. And he talks about how he's the vine and we are the branches. And this passage of scripture is so important for us to read today, or to know, because it's the encouragement but also the conviction that we need. John 15:5 says, Jesus says to us, apart from me, you can do nothing. Which means that if we want to start a revolution, we have to rely on Jesus. We need to hold tight to him because he is our vine. Jesus is the ultimate example of a faith revolution. And if we are going to live a life revolutionized, we need to rely and be close to him. And a couple verses down, he says this in John 15:8, by this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and prove to be my disciples. We are called to act out and live out our faith. But if you take anything away from this message, the revolution that embodies our lives should be characterized by love. Even when it's hard, love. Even when you don't have a solid reason, love. The two greatest commandments are characterized by love. Love God, love others. In a world so filled with hate, so filled with disgust, so filled with judgment, so filled with more hate on top of that, we need to love powerfully. And when we love powerfully, we will change the world. We will start a faith revolution. In the ESV version of Acts, chapter 17, verses 6 through 7, read this. These men, talking about the disciples, have turned the world upside down. Why was this written? Well, because the disciples were proclaiming that there was another king besides Caesar. And the religious leaders were so thrown off by this that they described them as flipping the world upside down. And if you don't get goosebumps because of that, that just fires me up. They were flipping the world upside down. And I believe that we are in a time period where we too can flip the world upside down. The revolution I want is to have a passion, to have an outlook, to have a gut, to flip the world upside down, and a resolution will not do that, but a revolution will. So, instead of making New Year's resolutions, let's make New Year's revolutions with how we live as disciples of Christ.